Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I am Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago, along with Charlie Remeliotis. We're going to get to your email bag questions throughout this podcast. And obviously, it's been an emotional week with the passing of Stan Mikita. We had that podcast on Tuesday after word came out that Stan had passed. We had Eddie Olczyk, Cliff Coral, and the coach, Mike Ditka, who I was unaware was in his wedding party, Stan's wedding party. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see, obviously, the team pay tribute to him during the season at some point, and he'll be laid to rest, and he'll be, you know, visitation will be at the United Center on Sunday.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the Blackhawks did something next season, whether it's a patch on their uniform or a decal on their helmet. This is Mr. Blackhawk. This is as big as when Ernie Banks died for the Cubs, arguably the greatest Blackhawk ever. So, yeah, you did a really solid podcast with Ditka and Coral, and so fans should definitely check that out. And maybe on Sunday, the visitation at the United Center, I'm sure a lot of fans are going to show up to that.
So we'll dedicate this this podcast, get back to kind of some hockey talk for now. And you've been away out of the country for a couple weeks.
Good to be back.
And good to have you back. Not much has changed other than we saw Corey Crawford at the convention. First time seeing him publicly since last February when he was in Arizona. Let's start here, Charlie, with the three free agent signings, Manning, Ward, and Kunitz, and the trading of Marian Hossa's contract to Vinny Hinostroza and Osterley to Arizona for Kruger and prospects. I ask you right now, let's assume that Corey is healthy. Is this roster better than last year's?
Well, in theory, they should be better because I don't know how you can get much worse than last year, finishing last in the Central Division. But on paper, I don't see how they got better than last year. I think the only upgrade they made was as the backup goaltender in Cam Ward. And I think he brings experience. He's obviously won a Stanley Cup, but that was as a rookie more than a decade ago. You know, the three free agent signings, Manning, Ward, Kunitz, I mean, those are all depth moves. They're not impact-type players. But I think the Blackhawks knew that going into free agency, that they weren't going to – like, they're looking at the roster and they're hoping – all these ifs are going to correct themselves. Like Saad is going to bounce back, and Schmaltz and DeBrincat are going to take the next step, and Sakura a full season. You know, we're going to see what we have with him. The defense, can it get better? Like, can it be any worse than it was last year? I mean, on paper, you still have a lot of guys and not enough impact players. So I don't see how they got better, especially when you consider what teams around those Central and the Western Conference did, is they added St. Louis, Winnipeg, you know, all these teams got better and the Blackhawks kind of stayed put, and they're banking on all these ifs internally.
I'll say Cam Ward's an upgrade. I'll agree with you on that. I'll say Manning brings that back end something it doesn't have much of, and that is, you know, some physicality. And Chris Kunitz, look, we all know, you know, we know his pedigree. We know the four cups. I think he could have a nice veteran voice to help bring along a slew of young guys that are looking to make that next step. But, you know, is he going to produce more than, say, Sharp did? Or what? I don't, you know, time will tell. But
yeah, the only difference between him and Sharp is I think Kunitz can contribute on the PK.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of important to lessen the load for the top guys. But yeah, that's just, you know, another – it's a fourth line.
Yeah. Signing. So, I mean, look, right now, again, assuming Corey Crawford's healthy, and that's a big assumption, I say maybe slightly better, or to me it's basically level par to last year's. And I, again, the Hinostroza loss is the big – is a big part of, you know, where I think they took a step back. Let's go to the mailbag. Robert Radulski, his question is, Crawford's comments at the convention contradicted Bowman, stating Crow would be ready for training camp. I have zero faith at this point that he plays regular season game one. Why is this situation so awkward? So, you know, you were out, but you certainly saw the video.
I did.
Corey was emotional. He, you know, said that he hasn't been back on the ice as of yet. He had made some strides, he felt, in the last month or so. At that point, we were still 2 months away from the start of training camp. And he said, you know, he might not be ready for the start of training camp. So, you know, talking to, you know, one of our colleagues at the convention, you know, I said, what does this remind you of? And they said, you know, it reminds me of that Sidney Crosby when we thought maybe we didn't know where his career was going to go in that 2011-12 where he missed over 100 games because of head injuries. And, you know, lo and behold, we've seen, obviously, he's recuperated. He's had concussions since, and he's won the Cup twice, two more times. So, I thought that was, you know, I kind of took a step back and I said, yeah, that's kind of where I don't know where this is going to go. I don't feel tremendously positive and, you know, glass half full that everything's going to work out because it's been so long. I mean, this is a long period of time now. This happened in December. You know, we're 8 months out and, you know, we're still talking about it. So, your thoughts on the question about Crawford and the contradiction to what the front office is saying?
Yeah, I think when we talked to Joel Quenneville and Stan Bowman, they kept reiterating that we expect Corey to be ready by camp, or, you know, and definitely be ready by the regular season. But Crawford's comments at the convention made it seem like that starting game one might not be a possibility. It might not happen. Like,
right.
Cam Ward might be the game one starter.
Right.
And that's a huge, like, I'm trying to read the tea leaves. Are the Blackhawks trying to put pressure on Crawford, or are they just really, they're just trying to speak it into existence? Like, we expect him to be ready. We hope he's ready. Yep. And then Crawford, you know, gets trot out there for convention and he says, I'm not 100% yet. So, like, there's still room for, as in part of his making progress, to get back on the ice, because I don't know if he's ready to get back on the ice yet.
I think it's important to point out, and this could be the reason why the Hawks were more optimistic about it and Corey was less, is my understanding is Corey is under the care of doctors through the NHL Players Association. So he's not right now under the care of Blackhawks doctors. So all the information they're getting is either from Corey or his camp or whoever he's given permission to talk on his behalf about his medical situation, which I would assume is just himself. So they're working from not a position of strength of really having complete knowledge of the situation. They're relying on the patient, so to speak, to tell them. So, you know, this is unlike most injury situations and rehabs where, you know, Dr. Terry and the Blackhawks medical staff aren't the lead docs on the road to recovery.
Right. And the fact that Crawford got a little bit emotional during the convention, you know, me, obviously I saw the video, I wasn't there, but it showed how much this has taken a toll on him emotionally and mentally. And probably just there was probably a time where he thought, or maybe he still thinks, that he wasn't going to play hockey again. You know, like,
right.
You go into a dark place.
Or thinking about his future. He just had a baby,
exactly.
You know, in the last year. And he's, look, head trauma is a, you know, CTE is a big topic, not only in the National Hockey League, but in every other sport that deals with major physicality, and he's probably thinking a little bit about that as well.
Right. Absolutely. So I'm not surprised, and he obviously squashed any external rumors that are out there. Like, I don't think any of that is playing into what he's dealing with right now. And maybe that's a reason why the Blackhawks are being so, when we asked about Anton Forsberg, I was like, well, what are you guys going to do with him? Because if you send him to Rockford, he's got to clear waivers, and there's a good chance he might get claimed. So that's probably why, probably a good chance that Forsberg is on the opening day roster, because right. Crawford might not be ready.
All right, let's continue on. One of the stories that came out before the passing of Stan Mikita, NHL.com came out with their top 20 centers. And look, this is what leagues do in their dormant time. They put out polls, they put out rankings, and it's for fans to banter and debate. And this one certainly, I think, within Chicago Blackhawks circles, fans will give them something to talk about. Their top 20 centers, they did not have Jonathan Toews in their top 20. Take it one step further, Jeremy Roenick ranked his top 10. He did not have Toews in it. Just for the record, Roenick had McDavid, Crosby, Malkin, McKinnon, Matthews, Kopitar, Scheifele, Tavares, Bergeron, and Stamkos. When you look strictly at the numbers in points, now again, he only played in 64 games, and he could have probably, if they were in, they were battling for a playoff spot, he probably would have played in at least six more. So maybe he had a few more points, but let's deal with what we saw last year, and this was the third year of decline, 52 points in 64 games. That put him like 47th among centers, like 20 points behind the 20th ranked player. So from that standpoint, I guess you'd say, how could you rank him in the top 20? What were your thoughts on the NHL.com ranking and the fact that, John was not a part of it?
Yeah, last year he was 12th, so he was still outside the top 10, but, still mentioned among the elite centers. It's, I'm not surprised by the list. This is especially when you reveal these kind of rankings every year, like you're just going to go by the previous year. So like William Karlsson's on the list. Do I think William Karlsson is a better center than Jonathan Toews? I do not. So I think Jonathan Toews should have been in his spot, or however you want to rank it. But I mean, it's telling that this is where Jonathan Toews is at in his career, where you're at a crossroads where do you still have a lot left in the tank as an elite center? The Blackhawks obviously certainly still view him as an elite center because he's still their first line center, when maybe you can argue Nick Schmaltz and Patrick Kane should be the top line.
Well, look, we always put him first as far as when we number the lines, because in the past, that's the way it's been. There's no question to me, whatever line Patrick Kane is on, that's the number one line. And he usually is among the leaders in ice time, although he's not out for penalty kills. And, Toews, I mean, again, this ranking, does it take into consideration that if he's not the best faceoff guy, he's in the top three? Does it take into consideration what that person brings on the penalty kill and all the goals that Jonathan prevents playing his two-way style, his defensive style, which, by the way, at the convention, we had him on Sports Talk Live, and he's like, I'm not changing who I am. So, like, he put a couple things out there. A, we asked him about training, and I think Cap was trying to get at, diet. And he kind of quickly said, that's top secret, and he's going to do things his way. And the other thing was, because we brought Kruger's name up and how that may help, take some PK minutes away. It sounded like to me 19 wants to do what 19 has done in years past. So, we'll see if that lines up with what Q and the Blackhawks think. But, this ranking doesn't take in the non-sexy things probably as much. But, if we looked at the NHL.com back in after 2015, he probably would have been one or two.
Right.
And Sidney would have been
you know, down in 3-4 or 5 or something like that. Well, you know, obviously things change a lot, and we've got an influx of now young talent, and they weren't a playoff team a year ago. So it's hard to give a guy who had a bad year on a non-playoff team a huge rating.
Yeah, and it's funny because this list, when you think of he's not a top 20 center, and then you think of, well, there are only 31 teams, so that means he's in the bottom. A lot of these, there are some of these teams, like Pittsburgh has Crosby and Malkin on the list, both on the, McDavid and Draisaitl are on the list, and then Backstrom and Kuznetsov. So, like, there are a lot of these teams, or some of these teams, have two guys on the list, and the Blackhawks don't have any when, you know, they used to have all these guys among the top. And but, yeah, it doesn't, like, to me, like, Taves is still a top 20 center, but he's slipping down the list, and it's important for him to try to climb back up that list because everyone's getting better.
So the question I have for you, does a list like this, does, you know, goofballs like us asking Jonathan about it, say when training camp starts or whoever, you know, he might do a radio show in Canada. When the topic comes up, will this motivate him a bit? And I'll say it will to a certain degree. I think John is his biggest critic, his own worst critic. He used a couple of words at the convention. They were humbled, embarrassed, and they can't look back on what they. This, it's like a total reset. You're no longer living on the three cups. You have to, you have to get back on top, and that's in the rearview mirror. So to me, he's already in that mode, and something like this might just be, oh, I don't know, that one little more driving force to spend an extra hour a day or half hour here or there on training, and it could help in the motivation category.
Yeah, you could be right. I don't think it will, only because I think he, like you said, he is his biggest critic. I think he knows, I think he knows what's not necessarily being said about him, but I think he knows what their perception is, because it used to be Crosby and Taves as a debate, who's the best player or who's the best center, and now it's like not even close. And I think the one telling part about this, when I kind of realized it, was in 2007, two years ago, when he was voted to the All-Star game, and it was because he was voted a top 100 player.
Right.
But like, he was like embarrassed.
Oh, he totally was. I mean, if you recall, Hossa had an amazing start to the season, and you know, at that time, I mean, he might have been fifth or sixth in points. And you're right. The only reason he was going is the top 100 were going to be named. He was a part of it, and rightfully so at that juncture. And I remember him kind of sheepishly addressing the media like, you know, there's many guys in this room that deserve it.
Right.
And he, you know, he named them. I mean, Corey and Haas and others. So, I think his reputation has carried him to a lofty spot. Everyone talks future Hall of Famer, and the top 100, I think, speaks for itself. But we're in a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately society, especially in sports. Three straight years, they forget about 15, they forget about 13, and they've certainly forgot about 2010.
Yeah, and I think it amps the pressure up, too, when Patrick Kane, the guy that signed the same contract as you, he keeps going to a higher level. Like, he won the MVP.
With different guys,
and I know he had Panarin to help him, too, but you know, the Blackhawks, they brought back Brandon Saad for Taves.
Right.
It didn't work out. For last year, it didn't work out, and Kane's production kind of stayed the same and obviously dipped off a little bit. But, you know, when you sign the same contract, it used to be Kane and Taves, and they were always living up to the production. But then Taves, drifted, and Kane kind of went to a higher level. So now there's that gap between Kane and Taves, and I'm sure Johnny is feeling a lot of internal pressure.
So that leads us to our next email bag question. It comes from Jen Perez. Jen says, due to a rumor, what are the chances of Panarin coming back to Chicago this season, or will the Hawks target him at next year's free agency? And this question stems from a piece that Scott Powers wrote in The Athletic in the last week, basically saying Panarin, which we've known, has stopped negotiating with Columbus, and that sources told Powers that that Panarin would consider the Hawks next year when he becomes an unrestricted free agent. So the question asked coming to Chicago this year, I would say almost certainly no, unless you're able to deal an Anisimov or somebody of a big ticket guy, because you know he's making $6 million a year right now, and he's gonna be making $9 million a year when you know in that neighborhood when he's a UFA next year.
Yeah, we keep talking about other prospects the Blackhawks can trade for, and we're looking at like who's on the roster that they could trade away, and if they don't have enough to trade for a lesser tier player than Panarin, I don't know how they're going to be able. I would say Panarin is definitely not coming back this season.
Yeah,
but I don't know if it's out of the realm of possibility for next year UFA wise, because all these hockey insiders keep saying, even all offseason, they were saying the Blackhawks are going to be players, they're going to try to get aggressive, and then they didn't do anything. And even after the Marian Hossa trade, I think Elliot Friedman even went on NHL Network saying, you know, does this open the door for the Blackhawks to go out and get or sign Erik Karlsson next year? You know, because they're going to have the money to work with. So I don't know. Like, I think the Blackhawks will be able to afford it. Now, how does that play into the, you know, they want to re-sign DeBrincat and Schmaltz. How does that interfere with those contracts? I don't know. But they do have contracts coming off the books, like Anisimov. Saad is going to be due a new contract, Crawford in 2 years. So there is going to be salary coming off the books, but they'd be really top-heavy if they went that route. But I do think if Panarin considers it, the Blackhawks might reach out and see how it, you know, if they could make it work. But I don't see that happening.
Next question from Brandon Fisher. Brandon writes, Q mentioned playing Saad with Schmaltz and Kane. Realistic? I think anything that Q says, I don't think he says it by accident. So I do think there's a chance that that's one of the line combinations we see early on. I don't know if it's one that I love, and I'll just tell you why. I mean, to me, Saad is a north-south, go-to-the-net hard type of guy. Kane plays a more east-west style. Cross-ice passes, tries to find soft spots in the ice. That's why he and Panarin work so well together, you know, setting up each other on one-timers. And, you know, I don't think that's Saad's strength, the one-timer. And I don't think it's Schmaltz's strength right now, the one-timer. So will they try it? Because Q mentioned it, I'm sure it will be tried. I don't know if it would be the way I would go.
Yeah, that's probably the way that Q is going to open camp with that line, at least Saad and Kane together. I'd be curious. Usually when this happens, the next year, Q throws a wrench in the lines that we don't expect. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's Saad and Kane together and then Anisimov and then Schmaltz is centering a third line or whoever. The problem is if you put Saad and Kane and Schmaltz together is who is Taze playing with? Because obviously DeBrincat, but Q was kind of reluctant to put DeBrincat in a top six role, especially on the first line, because you know you have to be more defensively responsible
right
when you're playing against tougher matchups. And then who's playing left wing? You know, so I don't know. That's it's a difficult. I get trying to balance out the lines and trying to see if a combination sticks. But the Saad and Taze line last year, they were really good, but they were very unlucky. So I think there's got to be a correction there. And maybe you just toy with the right winger.
All right, so that leads to our next question. And it goes to Dawid Babila. And he writes, what do you predict the lineup will look like? What's our top nine going to be? What should the defensive pairs look like? All right, well, let's start with the forwards. And since we mentioned Q saying trying Saad with Schmaltz and Kane, I'll say let's start there. Saad, Schmaltz, Kane.
Wait, to be clear, this is what we think
what
he was
we think,
do,
yeah.
Right?
This is not okay. what necessarily is, I would right, right, sign okay. off on or co-sign. This is what I think Q will tinker with.
Okay.
On the Taves line, I think obviously he'll put DeBrincat on the right side. And Victor Aitzel, I think, could be the left winger there. On the third line, I've got Sakura, Anisimov, and Kampf. And on your fourth line, I have Kunitz, Kruger, and Hayden.
Yeah, I think the only one I agree with Q with is the fourth line. I think that's going to be a pretty solid fourth line, Kunitz, Kruger, Hayden. The rest is just, it's really all.
Put it in a hat.
Yeah, exactly. Just put it in a hat. Well, it's difficult because you took away Hinostroza from the top nine.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, Hinostroza would have been pretty solid maybe on the right wing with Saad and Taves. Now you don't have him. Sakura, I think they would ideally like him to play with more skilled players, but you're going to, you might get sheltered to a third line role with Anisimov right off the hop. So I don't know. I think. And Aitzel is the one that it's kind of intrigues me. Like, he's the guy that took a big step with Rockford last year in such a short amount of time that do the Blackhawks want to throw him in there right away? Or I think they kind of have to because you don't have anyone else that, you know, Matthew Highmore might get a look or
Martinson. That was a guy that Q, again, and you know, you got to speak Q, and I think most astute Blackhawks fans know. You know, he was okay, means didn't play well. I mean, but when he goes out of his way, and he went to Rockford for most of those playoff games, Marty, as he called him, was a guy he pointed out more than a couple of times. So, you know, put that in my Q decoder ring, and I was like, all right, Marty's got a decent shot maybe of at least getting a solid look. So I don't know. The problem here is there's so many guys that we just, like, their body of work, you know, Aitzel's body of work is very small. It looked good in the Calder Cup playoffs. He was a sniper, but it was the Calder Cup playoffs. Sakura, handful of games. I don't know if he's ready either, you know, to handle the physical toll or, you know, the defensive side. Kampf, you know, jury's still out. You know, I'm with you. I think the Hayden, to me, you know, and I said it to John when he went down last year, he was a victim of, they ran out of guys that didn't have to, that would have to clear waivers to be sent down. And when they wanted to bring up Vinny,
yeah,
you know, it was tough, but to me, you know, he made the most of the opportunity. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but you know, there's a lot of question marks going into camp.
Yeah, I think the one guy I'm really intrigued about is Jakob Nilsson. He's the guy that Blackhawks signed overseas that worked with Jeremy Colladin in Sweden. And I think he's probably going to be one of the first call-ups that we see if he doesn't make it out of opening day roster. And I know the Blackhawks are really high on him because he plays a kind of a gritty style. And he's also very skilled. I think, I can't remember who said it. Either it was Stan Bowman or Jeremy Colladin said, skilled players are going to love playing with him because he's just easy to work with and he can play a different style. So I think that's the guy I'm watching as a potential spark plug to come up later on in the season or to kick off camp.
As we try to give our projected D pairings that we think Q will maybe start or tinker with in camp, quickly, Kevin writes, for a while, it seemed like Gustav Forsling was our top D prospect, but after failing to make the roster full-time, an injury until November, and the influx of many talented D prospects, is he starting to become a lost cause? I think a lot of interesting points Kevin brings up. I do think last year in camp, he was he had a lot of juice behind him. A lot of people thought, you know, he would be, and he started off, I think, with a lot of fanfare. The injuries sent down. I don't know if he accepted that role of being sent to Rockford the way they wanted to see it. He had some injury situation there. And, you know, thought you might see him at the end of the year with the Hawks. You never did. So, you know, for right now, he's going to be, he's got the wrist injury, right? So Is it 8 weeks?
Yeah, 8 weeks. I think he's going to come back in November.
Right.
So that puts him at a huge disadvantage to obviously he's not going to start the season with them. So it just puts him at a huge disadvantage when you got Joakim Haru and all these guys trying to compete, Blake Hillman, all these guys trying to compete for the same roster spot. And I think how much of it do you think the I don't want to say hype around Gustav Forsén, because I don't think there was hype. It's just he was their best D prospect that they had.
Yeah.
But now that they have Joakim Haru and Boqvist and Bodan, it's kind of like, well, he just immediately went to the fourth or fifth best prospect. I think he's expendable now because you brought in all these young defensemen that with much higher upside that I think maybe he's a guy that you look to trade as part of a bigger package.
But it's going to be hard to trade him, obviously, with him being injured and yeah, nobody have any tape on him other than what happened. And he actually played, I thought, pretty well.
He did.
In the Calder Cup playoffs.
Yeah, and the first month of the season last year, he and Jan Ruda were the best pairing the Blackhawks had. So there's value there, but he's losing his value is decreasing when he gets injured, and then he keeps getting sent to Rockford and things like that. So
look, the D pairings, like, to me, they're still missing a top four guy. They need one, but I'll just throw some names that we could see at least in training camp. Keith and Joakim Haru, which again is the 19-year-old ready to make the jump. It certainly seems like the organization hopes he will.
Yeah.
Manning and Murphy. I mean, to me, that's a third pairing. So to me is Gustafson and Seabrook. So I mean, throw it in a hat: Gustafson, Seabrook, Manning, Murphy. You know. Again, there's a lot of question marks here, and I still think it's the weak link of this team.
Yeah, I think with the Forsling injury, I think Joakim Haru is for sure making the team because I don't think they're going to bring up, you know, a Blake Hillman or whatever just to get him a few games and then send him back down to Rockford or whatever. I don't think I would put – well, ideally, you would love for Joakim Haru to play with Keith, but I don't know if Quenneville is going to do that. I think they would probably start him out in, like, a third-pairing role, and I would probably bump Connor Murphy up with Keith just for the first month of the season, mm-hmm, kind of get Joakim Haru's feet wet a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it's Duncan Keith, and then it's a lot of question marks after that. And I don't even know if, you know, there's still – like, Duncan Keith's play – kind of tailed off last year too, so there's still that. Is Duncan Keith still a top pairing defenseman? He certainly is, but he's certainly a top four defenseman, but he's 35 now, so 34,
yeah, 34
35, so like he's getting up there in age where you can't always be like, oh well, they got Keith and then everyone else. Like at some point we're going to be like, okay, well, Keith's play is trailing a little bit. Now you need someone else to step into that role. Yeah. And I think that's why they drafted Boqvist.
Yeah, look, a lot of things on the Keith front here. One, you know, he never had a D pairing that I think he felt totally comfortable with. One thing he also said at the convention was, I didn't handle losing well. Like, he was not used to that. And I think he said the quote to us was, I have to work on my attitude in that area. So, like, he realized that didn't go over well. Maybe he might have been hard on some of the young guys that he was paired with. Maybe just, you know, put too much on his shoulders and just things didn't work out. Look, we should probably do a podcast on, you know, who's going to have the biggest bounce back, you know, our predictions on bounce back, because there's a lot of the guys you could list, Saad and Taves and all, you know, the list goes on and on. But I think Keith is poised for a bounce back year. I liked what I heard at the convention, and if they could find some consistency, which, geez, I hope they can. Otherwise, I don't know why you signed all these guys to come back. you know, I think it can only get better for Dunks.
Yeah, I remember. I think he's the one Blackhawk that takes losing the hardest. Like, absolutely, he's the guy that wears it on his sleeve, and when things aren't going the way they are, he's just, you can see it. And I do remember asking Duncan Keith right at the end of the season when the Corey Crawford injury happened, did it affect the way or change the way you guys played as defensemen? And he said, yeah, you know, it did. So I think that definitely, if you go look at Duncan Keith's numbers when Corey Crawford got hurt, I think his plus minus was obviously in the plus. And then he was like a minus 30 or something after Crawford. Like, so.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
It obviously
hand in hand.
Exactly. So I do agree. I think Duncan Keith is going to be fine. He's going to be the top pairing defenseman. I think he's definitely a candidate to bounce back too.
All right. Kevin Korpstein writes, since Carolina basically gifted Jeff Skinner to Buffalo, is there any chance the price comes down on Justin Falk closer to the season? If so, what could the Hawks potentially give up to get him? Now, you remember Skinner went to Buffalo for Cliff Pugh and three prospects. And he's in his walk year, and he's 26.
Three draft picks.
Three draft picks. Yeah, I said three prospects. So
yeah.
Three draft picks?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they were not high-level draft
picks. Not high-level.
They were like third, fourth rounders.
All right. Justin Falk, he's 26. He's got 2 years remaining at 4.8. This comes down to, like, you went and created the cap room with Hosa and selling off his contract to Arizona by basically, you know, sweetening it with Vinny Hinostroza. Now you got some money to work with, a little over $5 million. Falk could fit for sure, but like you said before, they're running out of pieces on the current roster to give up.
Yeah.
Without, you know, subtract, you know, like it gets to a point where, well, who's going to take an Isimov spot if you deal him or what have you. And, obviously an Isimov's at the top of my list of guys that I would be ready to say goodbye to. But, you know, to me, it might be these prospects, you know, like you mentioned, a Gustav Forsling or whoever, that are tweeners that can't quite crack it with the Blackhawks, but might fit somewhere else. And, you know, look, we saw last year with the Michael Kempney situation, he was instrumental in Washington winning it all. And pairing him with Carlson was a game changer. Pairing him with who he played with here in Chicago didn't work out.
Right. Yeah. And I think, like you said, like at some point you need to stop subtracting from your current roster, because you're not, like, you're subtracting from your current roster, but then you're opening up a hole again.
Yeah.
You know, by patching up a different hole, and you're just kind of playing, you're just shuffling around the cards, and you're not actually getting better. I was a little bit surprised that the Blackhawks didn't go for Jeff Skinner if that's what the package was. I was always under the impression that a Skinner deal was probably contingent on him signing a long-term extension, which is why I maybe thought that it was going to be more challenging to get done, because then the package definitely would have been much larger than what Buffalo traded for. And then maybe you revisit re-signing him after. The Blackhawks have their prospects pool. Like, I don't think their second and third rounder in 2020 or 2021 matters right now.
Yeah.
They got the prospects. They replenished their defensive group with Joakim Haju and Bodan and Boqvist. Like, now is where the draft picks can become, like, you can trade.
I mean, because you have a logjam. I mean, Mitchell,
exactly.
You got all these guys coming up,
exactly.
And they're all, you know, right-handed shooting defensemen.
Right.
And, you know, there's only so many places these guys can play. You need to identify, rank, and the ones that you don't feel strong about, which is hard to do when they're playing in Denver and you know, in the OHL or wherever. It's not as easy to forecast, you know, what their NHL potential is going to be.
Right. So with Justin Falk, like, obviously he would make sense for the Blackhawks. I'm trying to read what Carolina would want for him, or if they're even willing to move him at this point. Like, I think they just might go into this
season. Because they got a ton of cap room. They've got 18 minutes. It's not like they're – I mean, I know they brought some big-ticket guys on, but, I mean, geez, they're $18 million under right now.
Yeah, and they drafted Svechnikov, which he's getting thrown right into the fire. He's probably going to be a top-line guy from the get-go. They're banking on Scott Darling to bounce back. Like, they want to be a playoff team where – I was kind of under the impression going into this offseason that new ownership kind of wanted to redo it all and maybe kind of tear it down again and restart and maybe even sell the team because it seemed that way for a while. So I don't know what Carolina wants.
Well, I mean,
to do.
The thought is they wanted Saad or Schmaltz.
Yeah, but like trading Jeff Skinner for like a bag of pucks, like I don't understand what that was. Like, at least just get a roster player. Like, what are the prospects going to do? Anyways, whatever. It's all. I'm just trying to read it from Carolina's side. Like, I don't think there's urgency for them to move Justin Falk at this point.
All right, so we're going to close our podcast with this question, and I think I've asked it to you probably three or four different times. As we sit right now, okay, is basically the names that are currently in the organization, are those the names that are going to be vying for spots when training camp opens, or does Stan have one more move to make before training camp starts?
So, yeah, I feel like we revisit this every topic, and then we're like, at what point? It was like the convention.
I'll probably keep asking you the question up until the night before training camp starts.
The day before opening day. No, I did say, though, that the one move I thought they would for sure make is the Marian Hossa contract, mm-hmm. and they did that. I thought that would come later on, though. I thought that might come in September, where, you know, the lower payroll teams kind of figure out that, okay, we need to get to the floor. How do we do it? I still think this is the group. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly think there's a little wild card in here because there are a few free agents. One in particular, I think Rick Nash is a guy that's still on the market. I think the Blackhawks could easily look at that as a one-year deal. He was contemplating retirement this offseason, so he's not going to – he already lost leverage in commanding a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, but you'd obviously have to give him enough money that he would want to come back and play hockey.
Yeah, what number do you think that might be?
Four.
Okay.
Four, I think. And why not? I mean, you got the cap room.
Yeah, you got the cap room.
If it doesn't work out, you ship him out to a contending team if the Blackhawks are part of it.
I'm going to hold out hope that he's got one more move, whether it's signing a free agent or finding a top 4D somehow, some way, and packaging a deal. And, you know, maybe somebody falls out of favor in camp. But I have a feeling that let me expand it. That they will make a move before the start of the regular season. It could happen a little bit in the preseason.
Right. And this is why I think that is because I think there's still a lot of uncertainty with Crawford that they don't want to make a bigger splash because it's irrelevant if Crawford isn't ready to go.
Yeah.
So I do think the Blackhawks will be candidates to be an early trade candidate. Like, they could make a move in November because I really think Stan is talking about, you know, all these ifs, and he wants to see how these ifs play out in maybe the first month or so of the season. And then he could be like, okay, well, this is where we are as a team. Let's go out and get whoever's expendable, a top four defenseman in November.
That's going to do it for this week's podcast. Thank you for your email questions. We really appreciate that, and thank you for listening as always. That's the Hawks Talk Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. For Charlie Romeliotis, I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.